Good evening, everyone. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and this is Authors on the Air. Tonight, I am speaking with debut novelist Ryan Aldridge, who wrote a book called, oh my God, you're going to love this. It's a book called Rum Luck. I love it. It's a mystery. So Ryan bid on an interview with Authors on the Air at BoucherCon. And we're going to hear all about it in just 1 second, so don't go away, because you might want a book. Back again. I am speaking tonight with Ryan Aldridge, who is from Canada, who's going to tell you all about the fancy island that he lives on, and we're going to talk about all his work. But it's very important for me to tell you that Ryan bid at BoucherCon this year on an auction item that the network presented, and that was for an interview. Poor guy, he got stuck with me, but, you know, it is what it is. But Ryan is a guy who is really interested in doing charitable works. He runs a small Canadian charity that supports education in Afghan, Tanzania, Uganda, and other at-risk regions. So I'm truly, truly excited that he's here to talk to me about his book. He's going to tell us a little bit of his background also. So presenting Ryan Aldridge. Ryan, welcome to Authors on the Air, and thank you so much for your generous donation to BoucherCon's charities.
Thank you so much for having me, Pam.
I'm thrilled that you're here. You have a very interesting background because it says on your bio that you were a defense analyst, and you continue to serve as a sergeant in the Canadian Forces Reserve. I'm not sure what that relates to, except the Army Reserves or something here in the United States. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about that and how that kind of work and your charitable work made you become an author. Because it's very, you know, I'm not seeing a straight line.
So I've been in the reserves now in Canada. It's similar to what the Army Reserve in the U.S. would be like.
Okay.
And I've been in now for about 18 years. It's hard to believe,
wow.
mid-30s, but I joined at the age of 17. I joined the Armored Corps in Canada, which is a little bit different than the Armored Corps in the U.S. would be. Our tanks look like a tank if you squint at them. They have wheels as opposed to treads. But no, I basically, they had the brochure that had, you know, the medic and the infantry and the signaler. And then they had someone in a tank wearing a helmet with binoculars. And I said, that's what I want to do. And I really enjoyed it. I was in grade 11 at the time when I signed up. I spent most of my weekends in grade 12 driving 6 hours to Wainwright, Alberta, and then 6 hours back. If you haven't heard of Wainwright, Alberta, there's a reason for that. I still remember being on basic training and getting my first leave and being so excited to check out the town of Wainwright, Alberta. And there was a literal
no
tumbleweed
town.
Blowing across the street. And there were bars we weren't allowed to go to, and there all of the glassware of the bars was plastic to prevent shattering and use in bar fights. It was, for a 17-year-old from Calgary, it was a great adventure and the chance to spend my weekends driving a reasonable hand-drawn facsimile of a tank was fantastic. So yeah, and then when I came to Kingston, Ontario to go to school, and there wasn't an armored unit here, so I actually ended up joining the intelligence branch, which is where I am today.
Oh, how interesting. And are you still a reservist in the intelligence division?
Yes. So I've worked full time for various periods of time. Like I've gone on courses, I've done full time contracts, that sort of thing. Life as an intelligence operator is far less exciting than one might think. I traded my $1 million tank for a $5 pack of markers, as some people say. But military intelligence is a job description and not necessarily a job requirement. But no, it's been a lot of fun.
Is that an oxymoron there? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Oh, it's, you know what? You do the best you can with what you have, but it's an inexact science. We'll say that.
There you
go.
I
really enjoy it. And, you know, I'm a sergeant, and that's one of the most privileged positions in an army. When the troops come in through that door, once they've gone through that whole grinder of courses and being kitted out and everything like that, I'm often the first person they see. And I take a real sense of ownership of that and wanting to just make sure they do the best they can. And a lot of the people who come our way, they end up joining the regular force or going off on tour. You know, even though it's Canada, we're still a pretty active army. And yeah, today is November 11th for us is Remembrance Day. And
and Veterans Day for us, right?
Exactly. So yeah, It's a big responsibility, even, you know, for us. Canada right now is essentially a peacetime army at this point. But it's still a big responsibility, and I take it very seriously. But I think I've learned a lot from that. I wanted to be an author when I first was leaving high school, but I think, you know, going out there and doing some living and getting a few kicks under your belt, that sort of thing. It's good for your writing. It's good to have that to draw back on. And it's one of the things it's helpful. It comes easy to me. I never have to worry about whether or not, you know, if someone's picking up a rifle in a book, whether or not the details are going to be realistic or unrealistic, because I've been doing that part of it so long. I really enjoy it. I think it adds a lot to my work, and it's been a lot of fun, and I'm planning to stay in until they kick me out. I'm literally waiting for
good
the base
for
time
you.
To say, okay,
now,
it's time for
I
you to go.
May I assume that you got married while you were still in service to your country, and you have a son, do you? Is that correct?
I have two children. I've got a son and a daughter. The daughter's just about 10 months now.
Congratulations. I was looking through some of your pictures and on your Facebook page, and you have a beautiful family. So that's a wonderful thing. You are already a successful man if you have such a lovely family. Yeah. So, you know, you talk about the nexus between your service to your country and your book, but I want to kind of wind back the clock a little bit if we can. Were you always a reader as a child? Do you remember reading a lot, or were there books in your home that you recall?
I think the first one that really stands out, there's a Canadian author who writes a lot of young adult work by the name of Gordon Corman. And one of the first books that really stuck with me, he wrote this fantastic standalone called I Want to Go Home. And it's the story of a young boy who's sent away to summer camp, who is exceptional in every way at sports, but who absolutely hates it. And it was just laugh out loud funny. I remember like lying in bed and reading, and this was the first book that had me reading late into the night, and just laughing my head off at some of the things he had in there. So it was from a young age, it was something I remember just reading, just enjoying it so much, being drawn into that other world and just loving it.
How great. You know, if a book does that when you're young, we've got you for the rest of your life, hopefully. So did you continue to read, and did you begin to write at all?
So I think I started just sort of dabbling in writing, even at around the same time I started to read. Mm-hmm. I started to just write things down and just take notes. And I actually wrote, it was when I was in high school, I wrote what would be a novella just by word count. I thought it was a novel at the time, about a senior citizen's home that declared itself an independent nation. And this book is, I finished it. It's absolutely unpublishable, but it really, I think, laid the seed to say, hey, I can finish a novel length work. And of course I sent it off to a few publishing houses at the age of 17.
Do you still have the manuscript, by the way?
I do have it, and I am tempted to do something with it at some point to go back. It would need some rewriting, but I still, when I tell people the premise, it still gets that little bit of a laugh, and it was a funny book. So one of these days, I think I might go back, because I think we live in the age where, if you can find the right niche, readers will pick it up if it's well done. I agree with you
100%. And, you know, that it was novella length is interesting to me, because nowadays, so I've heard, that most readers, you know, the average person reads one or two books a month, but the average reader prefers a shorter book than a longer book. Now, someone like me, I don't care how long it is, as long as the story is good and it's well written. The longer the better, as far as I'm concerned, if the book is good. But chances are, you know, you could take your premise and turn it into something really fun, which leads me to ask you about Rum Luck. I want to make an assumption, and it may be wrong, so you're going to have to correct me, but I look at the jacket of your book. You are independently published, are you, Ryan?
No, I'm with Five Star, which is part of Gale Cengage.
Right. Okay. So my question to you would be, did you come up with your cover, or did your publisher? And when I look at your book jacket, it makes me think that this is not one of those blood and guts, horrifying thrillers, but I'm going to have some fun and someone's going to end up dead, and this is going to be a mystery. Am I right?
That's really what I was going for with the cover. It was something that that I designed in conjunction with there's a local author, Mark Kaelin Bishop, and he does some really beautiful illustrations. He's done children's books and things like that in the past. And he has a really great sense of humor. And I said, Mark, I want something that's fun but sinister. And I think he really came up with it. The cover has these bright oranges and yellows, and it's this beach at sunset, but looking in from the ocean inward, and with sort of this arm facing rather mysteriously towards the mainland. And I really wanted to capture that, to say this is not going to be, it's not a gory book. It's not, it's not a cruel book. It has those, a little bit of elements of that, of noir. There's, you know, that a little bit of corruption. There's a little bit of organized crime in there. But first and foremost, it's a bit of an escape. It's a beach read.
It's a beach book, isn't it? It's a beach read.
It's a little
miniature
holiday.
I like very, very much.
Yeah.
How wonderful. All right. So with that, I'm going to say Authors on the Air is going to give the first caller an ebook copy of Ryan's book, Rum Luck, and you can call in at 347-633-9609. The number again is 347-633-9609. Give us a call, say hi to Ryan, and if you do, I'm going to give you a book. It's yours. So where did your premise for this particular story come from?
So it was maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, and I traveled down to Costa Rica with some friends, and we went to Tamarindo, which is the town that's featured in this book. And we had an eventful trip. We hit a pothole at one point and managed to bend the rim on the car. So we had to, every time we turned left, you could hear the air escaping as we drove. We had to stop at every gas station to fill up the air. We had a semi truck while we were stopped on one of these winding rainforest roads, and traffic at the time, and traffic still to this day in Costa Rica can get quite bad, just because of the the challenges of running roads through rainforest. We had a tractor trailer run into us from behind and start pushing up us up the hill because I had unfortunately stalled the car and they were getting impatient. We had the car die and have to be rolled down a hill so that it could be bump started, which is something that I didn't know you could do. But if you roll a manual car, you can actually get it going again. That
and then
way
pop the clutch,
dead.
Right.
Pop the clutch,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had, you know, Tamarindo is this kind of really cool surfing town that I've heard described as the way California was in like the 50s and 60s. But because of its proximity to Colombia, it's got a bit of an edge and it's actually a bit of a drug route. So we would have people come up to us. And it's one of those things. I've been to Tamarindo with my family and I found it very safe. But if you're like a single guy walking around, someone will come up and say, you know, hey man, do you need anything? And they mean virtually anything. You could probably
do you want drugs, right?
Do you want drugs? I'll
right.
take some drugs and
some
plastic explosives. I'm
right.
like, oh, that's the combo pack this week. That's great. So,
right.
But we had this idea.
That's the Caribbean, though. You have to understand that that's the Caribbean islands in Central America. That's just exactly how it is. But so I'm assuming that you – and when I looked at your pictures, I saw a picture of you with a surfboard. And I wonder, was that something that – you just tried then and when you were in Costa Rica, or was this something that you've developed a fondness for and have surfed in other places? Because I'm having a hard time envisioning you on Prince Edward Island surfing anywhere.
You know what? We actually do have a little bit of surfing here, believe it or not. Now, where we are is Prince Edward County, which is just outside of Toronto, as opposed to Prince Edward Island, which is on the East Coast.
Okay.
But we are an island as well. We love our royalty. It's Prince Edward everything around here. But Lake Ontario, when you get the waves like whipping in, you'll see people, and it's around this time of year, you'll see people wearing like full wetsuits in near freezing water, and they'll be surfing. It happens. I'm not one of those people. I like surfing. Surfing doesn't really like me very much. I've done it a few times. I enjoy doing it, I've enjoyed doing it in Tamarindo. It's one of the places that for anyone who is looking to start it, I'd certainly recommend it as a place to go. There's a very famous surf camp there, which is Rock Surf Camp, and they run some really great lessons. They've got a whole week long. Surf camps. So I think one of the characters at some point is going to go and try their hand at surfing.
Go to surf camp, huh? It sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, some friends of ours did it and they really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, one of our friends ended up twisting his ankle midway through. But it is a lot of fun. And it's neat because you've got actually, there is sort of a group of expats who sort of left the U.S. and other places and drove through
right.
Central America in the 70s. And so now you have, and set up these surf camps. And now you actually have, it's like at the surfer grandbaby stage where you've got people that have been there for so long. They've been there for 40, 50 years now. It's amazing. So
it
really is.
It
a very
is still a retirement destination. It's a retirement destination, no doubt. I speak to friends all the time who are saying, just recently, as you know, you may have heard that we had a little election here. And so a lot of people are saying, okay, I'm going to Costa Rica. And I'm like, hasta la vista, baby. You know, have fun. Whatever. But it is a great vacation spot. And a lot of those little countries down there are a lot of fun. But it's not as cheap as everyone thinks. The economy has grown, I think, by the expats, and that's the reason. It has become quite pricey to live down there now. So, do you go back? Is this an annual thing you and your pals do?
Well, it's a little bit more challenging to get down for a week when you've got two little kids. But my wife and I
sure.
and our family, we like getting down to Manuel Antonio, which is an area that's a little bit further south than Tamarindo. And they've got beautiful natural parks, lots of monkeys and sloths and iguanas and toucans and that sort of thing. So that's where we like to go. We're getting down there in January. So very excited about that of getting back
Tough
and,
fun.
You know, doing some research, of course, doing a little bit of writing, but mostly just having a chance to sort of sit by the beach. As you may have heard, it gets a little cold in Canada from time to time. So.
Yes. So, you know, you said the magic word, the next question I want to talk to you about. You have this idea because you and your buddies went down there and you had a great time and, you know, your creative mind was just spinning around. And from that comes Rum Luck. But now, how much research do you do when you've experienced this yourself? And as you said, discussing weapons or something like that isn't a problem if you're part of the military, as you are. You've had some training and some, I'm not saying combat experience, but you've had some training. So obviously, you know, you don't have to research a lot of weapons, I would imagine, because it is more of, like you said, a beach book. So tell me to what extent you researched for this first book.
I think after it wrapped up, I went back down just to get the details right, just to make sure. It had been a decade since the last time I was down in Tamarindo. So making sure the beach still felt the same way and getting those little details that you
know. Oh, it sounds horrible.
Like
you poor thing.
Yeah. It's a really, really
terrible.
Tough life. The research.
Research,
you know,
trips.
To,
oh, God.
We
yeah,
sat
right.
in chairs for days. The amount of there's a local liqueur there called Guaro, which is like a sugar. It's like rum,
right.
But it's not like rum. It's fabulous. But anyways, the amount of Guaro.
You had to make sure it tastes the same as the first time you tried it, right?
Absolutely. But no, it's important to go back every once in a while just to get the details right. That is the challenge when you set it in a real town. But it was funny because, so the premise of the series of these books is that these friends decide to rent the bar out to those who've always wanted the experience of running a bar on a beach somewhere. So one week it'll be a vodka lounge run by a Russian oligarch, the next a blues joint by an ex-CIA agent, that sort of thing. A really fun license to bring in all these wacky characters. And that was the idea that my friends and I had when we visited there. It's like, let's set up this bar for people who want that experience. But it was funny speaking to someone who had moved there. Someone had moved there from San Diego to open a flower shop. And he said, you know what? I think that business would do really well here. So that, I think, you know, counted for a lot in my book, that it actually sounded like something that would work.
Oh, how fun. So when you made that decision that you could envision yourself writing this series, did you write down what you thought you wanted to do and the ideas you thought you could use for subsequent books?
I have some ideas. I have some broad brushstrokes. I think part of it is, like, when I'm outlining, I like to have sort of the points on the map, but I try not to draw routes for the characters to get there. I just don't want to constrain them too much. And I'll set out an outline. I'll write maybe two or three pages, and then I'll find myself tearing it up and doing it over again. So minimal detail on that, I think, goes a long way to just make sure that I'm not, I think from my perspective as a writer, when you constrain your characters too much, they end up trying to almost break themselves free of it. So that for me, I've got a few ideas. I've got some ideas for other characters I'd like to bring in, other pretend owners I'd like to bring in, some broad strokes for the major characters. But I'm trying to keep it as open as possible. I don't want to close off any avenues at this point. We're one book in. So
there you go.
Lots of room
to go. Doesn't one idea oftentimes lead to another? And so why would you shut that door? You know, it doesn't make sense. Go ahead.
I was saying it's funny that I sometimes, you know, get asked, well, where do you come up from with your ideas? And from my, you know, I like to say there's no better way to come up with new ideas than committing to one idea. As soon as you have one idea that you're focusing on, your brain will start going, oh, wait, what about this? Oh, what about that? And,
right.
I just try and get those down with one or two pages and sort of set them aside so my brain can focus on something else. So it's nice to be in that perspective where you can get those new ideas coming in and just jot them down and set them aside for some other time.
Have you started book two yet? And have you completed it?
I have a draft of it. Rough draft would describe it fairly accurately. I'm going back and I'm going to add characters. I'm going to delete characters. I'm going to change a lot of things.
So this was you did the throw up version. You threw all the words out. You threw up all the words. Now you're going to go back and try to make them fit into place, right?
Yeah, I just want to give it that polish. I think for me, the banter comes very easily. I can put the characters in a room and they can say funny things at each other all day long. The mystery I have to work a little bit harder at. And I, you know, it's gotten good reviews.
Yes.
Lots of 4 stars, 5 stars. But for me, I think if I can crack that nut of having an excellent mystery and a very, very funny book, that's ideal. I'm a huge Agatha Christie fan. I'm amazed at what she can do or what she's done with her work. And yeah, I really want to make sure that the mystery is as strong as it could be. So that's
I'm
going to
send you a book. Do you read on a Kindle by any chance?
Sometimes,
yes. Canada's Kindle, I think, has a different format than the United States. I'm going to send you a book recommendation of a light mystery, you know, a good mystery, a very well-done mystery, with the lighthearted banter, and written by a woman who I'm very, very fond of. We've become very good friends. And the series is called the Lucky O'Toole series. And I think that you just might be the male version of Deborah Coons, who writes the book. And you may have even passed her at VoucherCon at one point or the other, because she was there this year. So I'm going to send you the book, and then I'll buy the copy and just mail it up to you. I want you to read it and tell me what you think. And because it seems to me that you have a lot of ways to go with the character. Now, you generously sent me the book to read. I loved it. It was a lot of fun. I didn't want to write a review until after I spoke to you. That's just the way I am. But I think that you will find you and Deborah have a lot in common as far as this particular style of writing is concerned, your beach book, and both very enjoyable. So I'm going to do that. Do you think at some point or the other, Ryan, you will want to not write a beach book? You'll want to maybe try something a little bit different, even a different genre?
I actually have another series on the go right now, and it's more of a thriller, and it's about a private search and rescue operator who's drawn into the global antiquities trade. So a more serious book, but it's been a lot of fun as well. It's actually loosely based around, there's a company called Global Rescue, and you can pay an annual fee. And if you get into trouble somewhere in the world, they'll come and get you, whether you're, you know, stuck in the middle of Cairo during the Arab Spring, or if you get a stick in the eye in the Amazon River Basin, they'll basically come for you anywhere in the world. So that kind of a character,
wow,
or that kind of a premise, I think, has a lot of potential. So yeah, I'm working on now, polishing it, very, very close to sending it out. I'd like to do that series as well. One of my big editors is my wife, and she has, you know, she doesn't pull any punches, and she says, you know, I really like Rum Luck and that series. She says, I love The Extractor. I love that idea. I love that world. So no, I like having multiple series on the go. I think that's always going to be something that I do. I'd like to have, you know, two on the go, maybe some standalones in the works as well. I'd like to do a book year
fun.
If possible. That's the goal. So.
I have an author friend who comes on here regularly, who does about 5 or 6 books a year. He does really, really well. I just don't understand how he does it. He's that prolific. As a matter of fact, I looked it up one time, and he's the 5th most prolific author in the world, only after Agatha Christie. So isn't that amazing? I don't know how people do that, but his mind is going all the time. It's Russell Blake. He's self-published, always has been. He's 5 years, he's written 50 books and has millions and millions of sales. Just amazing to me.
A mentor of mine, Vicky Delaney, she has 24 books out now. Oh, she's fantastic.
Yeah.
She's actually here
she's
in
wonderful.
Vancouver County as well. And she actually was running a course that sort of got me into this a few years ago. I'd been writing for a long time, but I'd never done a mystery before. And it was really great. And she's just been a fantastic mentor throughout, offering lots of assistance.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She was just on one of the other shows in the network, and I think I might have I think I was the tech for that show. I wasn't the host. But we recently were talking to each other. I'm doing a Nasty Women Month in January, so that'll be female crime fiction writers. And I'm going to – hopefully I have a space reserved and Vicky's available at the time I have reserved for her because she's that good. She just is
that good.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, I'm glad to hear that you're at least expanding and you're moving on. You know, maybe the mystery crime fiction genre is what you're doing, but you still you have a lot of different places that you can go with that. You're not stuck in one place if that is what you like to write. You know, so good on you. I think it's fantastic. Do you ever, when you go back, you say you're polishing up your first draft and all, but do you ever read your dialogue out loud?
I actually think I read my dialogue aloud when I'm writing it, which probably is a little
bit
horrifying for anyone who's in the room. I mutter while I write. I'll never be a coffee shop writer because I think I would concern both the staff and the patrons. I like reading it aloud afterwards. Like for me, it goes through the stage of I write it, I set it aside for a bit, I go back, I edit it on the screen, then I print it, I edit it on paper. My wife will edit it on paper, and then I will sit down and read the whole bloody thing aloud. And I think I get a way better result from that. I know it doesn't work for everyone, but for me,
you have
to slow down. I would want to
because the top shelf authors that I've been honored to speak to have all said that that's what they do. And because what you think may be this is how it was described to me, what you think may be a normal speech pattern when you're writing it may be very awkward when you're reading it, which is a good reason to read, especially the dialogue. And that makes sense to me. And especially, I think, if you're writing to a male and female POV, you make an assumption that because you're saying something one way as a male writer, that a female's going to say the same thing. I always know if there's a romance book, for example, that's written by a man, I'm pretty certain I know, even if he's got, you know, using a pen name. I'm pretty certain I can always pick it out. It might be because I'm so used to reading so many books. You know, I read about 400 a year, so that probably gives me a little bit of an edge to pick up when someone's not, you know, they're not writing from the correct point of view, the character point of view. But I think reading is a smart thing that you do. I like reading aloud. I like reading really well-written passages out loud just for the poetry of the prose. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. To me, words have a weight and a cadence, and it's only when they're said aloud that you get that full depth of it. And I think having that chance to say it out loud, it takes time. There's no question, you know, and it's at the worst possible time for an author when you're like, I just want this to go out. I'm so done with it. But to do that, you'll save so much time. It is, for me, I save so much time in the long run by doing it that way, because
I'm sure.
I've gone back months down the road and thought things like, why didn't I catch this? This is ridiculous. So no, absolutely.
It's interesting because my favorite book this year, my favorite book, I've read three times, and it's in kind of, it's fiction, not really supernatural. You could think it was, but it's not, but it's fiction. And it's probably noir gothic, or gothic noir is the only way I can explain it. It's called The Saints of the Lost and Found, written by Tony McGee Causey, who, by the way, lives in the Quarter and was at BoucherCon. She lives right there, just off Bourbon Street, you know, like a block over. She and her husband are renovating an old building to live in. But she wrote this book, which is a total departure from what she's ever written before. And it is so, so good that I find myself going back to that book, plucking it off my bookcase, and reading. I have two copies, one that she signed and one that she hasn't. And the one that she hasn't, I've marked with highlighter because the words are so beautiful to me. I love reading them out loud. It's kind of like playing a favorite song over and over again. I especially do that with Prince of Tides because I think the words are so exquisite. Pat Conroy was a poet, in my opinion. James W. Hall, who writes great thrillers, does it for me too. just the words are so beautiful. I want to read them over and over again out loud. I don't know. Is that that's? I think that's a good thing for an author to know if a reader likes their books that much. Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's funny you mentioned Prince of Tides because I've never read it myself, but that is one of the books that I remember so vividly being on my mother's bookshelf growing up. It's funny those how things sometimes loop around like that. But I think there's something when you have a story that it just like when it just clicks with you, that moment.
Yes.
It's just I don't know what it is with people, but we have that
it
story.
Resonates
that just
on
clicks.
A
it's
cellular
so,
level.
Yes,
yeah, it gets you
it
right at the
absolutely.
Cellular level. It's something inside of you that makes an instant connection with whatever the set of words is, and that's when I know I have read one of the best books of my life. And you know something, Ryan? More and more, last year and this year, I have read more excellent books than any other time in my life. And that, for an avid reader, is like hitting the lottery. So if you are putting out your best work, I mean as good as it gets, and your readers latch onto that and they see that it's as good as it gets, I tell you what, I don't care if you get reviews, I don't care if you get awards or anything else, to know that you've moved someone at that level, to me, should be reward enough anyway. You know, I certainly want to call every author who's ever written a book like that, I want to call them and tell them thank you for writing the book.
It's funny because when I first set out to write this, I thought, oh, it's going to be a fun book. It's not going to be anything profound. But, you know, when you get readers to come back and they say, I really loved it and I really enjoyed it and it took me to a place that
right.
I love that. You know,
I
was surprised by how much I enjoyed hearing that. I had someone say, you took me to Costa Rica, and you have people in the community where I am that have never been on a plane before. And when someone who's never been on a plane says, I feel like I was there, I think it's for any author, when they get that moment, when they found that something they've said clicks with someone, that just it makes it all worthwhile in an instant, right? All
it has to, because otherwise, why are you writing if your intention is not to write the best book you can so that someone is going to read that and connect with you at that level? It doesn't make any sense to write otherwise, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so good for you. I'm glad that that's happened to you. And, you know, I can't wait to read your thriller because that's really the genre that I love the best. I read mysteries. I read thrillers. I read every genre and subgenre of romance, except I don't read historicals. And I like fantasy and science fiction. I don't like aliens and I don't like zombies and I don't like horror. But, you know, so I'm pretty open with what I'll read. But give me a good thriller and scare the crap out of me that way, some psychological thriller, man, I'm yours forever.
Oh,
I am the most loyal reader. You know, I have collections of books from authors. No, I just don't have their current one. I have their collections, you know, whether it's in paperback or hardcover or anything like that. Because once an author is it's like golden to me. I want to read everything they've ever put on paper. Even if it's a, you know, an op-ed in a newspaper, I want to read it. May sound silly. So what's next for you? What is next for Ryan Aldred up in Prince Edward County in Canada?
So, yeah, just wrapping up that book number two. So that's the first book of the new series, The Thriller. Going back and polishing up the sequel to Rum Luck, which is tentatively titled Hard to Port. And then, you know, just carrying on with running the reserve unit I'm with, and the charity that I'm with now is working on a project to bring the internet to an orphanage in Kabul, Afghanistan. So, no, just those kinds of projects. Just I love and
let's talk a little bit more about your charity, though, because that to me is real, real important. I'm so glad that you pay it forward. It's really, really important in my paradigm for life. So you're working with an orphanage or a school in Kabul, Afghanistan. You want to get them internet in their village or something. Is that what you said?
So the background for this was, again, it's almost 10 years ago now. This was right around the time that Canadian forces were deploying to join NATO down in Kandahar. And there was an article in the Toronto Star talking about a teacher there who was having a really hard time. He was running a women's school, wasn't able to pay his teachers, didn't have the computers he was looking for. We just decided to email him sort of out of the blue and go, oh, we'll help you buy a computer or something like that. And it grew into this huge project. At one point, we were up to about 1,800 students at the school. We'd offered the grants to get up to that, about 100 staff. I mean, the cost of hiring someone in Afghanistan isn't particularly high, so that helps. But I think we actually, it was one of the largest and most successful projects in Kandahar, which was the birthplace of the Taliban. So, you know, we've done a lot of great work there. And that project is still ongoing. It's a little bit smaller scale these days. But we just learned a ton about basically the role that someone who has, you know, 5 or 10 hours a week can do to help make a better world. There's a lot, you know, just to help an organization get onto the internet. And the problem is there's a lot of really great organizations, a lot of great schools out there. They have no idea of how to engage with the broader world, of how to get onto Facebook and have a website and get donations and what people are looking for in connection. Because what people really want is that bond with an individual student to feel like, I've helped that person. I've made a difference in their life. And so that's kind of what we've done is we worked with that particular school to help them develop, and we got them access to universities and post-secondary institutions in Canada. We helped them get lots of computers, get access to some of the grants that were out
there.
Lovely. Yeah,
well,
and just now,
let me offer to your charity, let me offer the services of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. If you ever want to use us to do commercials and to put them out into the world. We are an internet, obviously, radio media company. We're happy to allow you to use our studios, and you can do as many PSAs as you want. We'll post them. We'll send them out. We'll do whatever you want to do. The studios are yours to borrow anytime you want.
That would be amazing. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. We're glad to help. I mean, listen, anybody that's teaching and teaching particularly girls to read, and I understand under the Taliban that's really bad. They don't want girls to learn, have an education. And so I'm really all about helping girls and helping anyone read. And if there's anything we can do, you know, if I can mobilize authors to get books or anything like that, please let us know. And like I say, you're welcome to do PSAs and programs all you want to go ahead and fundraise. I'm happy to do all those things or make podcasts for you to share. Whatever you want, just let me know.
Oh, that'd be awesome. You know, 2016 has been a bit of a, I think most people would say a bit of a tough year. You know, we've lost a lot of great people, and but I do want to mention that, like, broad brush, there's been, I don't know how many schools that have gotten online, how many organizations that are connecting into this. There's a lot of amazing things happening in the world, and sometimes it's really slow and it's really tough to notice, but there are some really, really incredible things happening. Education is improing leaps and leaps and bounds. It's really something to watch.
That, you know, that is my answer to everything. If there's a problem, to me, education is the answer. You cannot say any one particular problem that I won't tell you that education will fix it. No matter what it is, I'm, you know, whether it's guns or clothing or, you know, access to books, education always is the answer as far as I'm concerned. You can always learn something, and that can only make things better. So, like I say, we're glad to help, and congratulations and thank you to you for the work that you do, because it's probably thankless and in the broader sense of the word, but it is probably also immensely rewarding to you and necessary. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. It basically involves a lot of staring at spreadsheets for long periods of time figuring out where I've made a typo. But no, it's been a lot of fun. I have really genuinely enjoyed it, and it's been really worthwhile. And I've learned a ton doing it too. So no, it's been really great.
Okay, so I want to ask you the final five. It's five quick questions and five quick answers. Are you game to play?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. So what kind of music do you like?
When I'm writing, I like Vitamin String Quartet, which does – they have a string quartet that does alternative music, but without any lyrics, because if I'm writing and I hear lyrics, it totally messes my brain up and I can't write. So that's why
they go into your book. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay, so if you're not writing –
if I'm not writing, huge range. Everything, we've been going through a big White Stripes phase at the moment, some Smashing Pumpkins.
Oh my God.
Rage Against the Machine.
Wow.
Offspring.
So you're doing a little alt rock, and that's where you are.
Yeah,
right,
alt rock is probably like the main one if I had to pick a, if I had to pick a single genre. But yeah.
And is it loud, really? I mean, headbangingly loud? That you like to listen to this?
It is very loud within the confines of my headphones, because usually there's a child having a nap somewhere.
There you go. Well, you know, you know, or when you're in the car alone, how loud you're turning up your stereo. There you go. So whose book are you reading right now?
I just picked up a copy of Agatha Christie's The Secret of Chimneys, and I'm really enjoying that. Like you said, short books. These are some short books that she's written, and they're really nice. And
They're nice to zip through. You get a compressed story that's absolutely complete from start to finish, and it may only be 100 pages, but it's still a full-length story, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I find every time I read one of her books, I've probably read a dozen, 20 at this point, something like that. Everyone I read, I feel like I'm learning something new. She's just such a master. So, no, it's really enjoying it.
And a contemporary author that you are particularly fond of?
I love Terry Pratchett. It was very sad, again, 2016, his passing. I just really enjoy his style and the way he's able to create such compelling premises, he just makes you care about these characters. He makes them real. He breathed life into them, and I think that's such an art, particularly in a world that is a little bit farcical and a little bit humorous. So I've really enjoyed his work. It's something I'll pick up one of his books whenever I'm feeling, you know, just like I need a boost. So no, I really like his stuff.
Very good. So you're in an alternate universe where there are no jobs that you're doing right now. What would you choose to do? Really, what's the most outrageous thing you've ever wanted to do?
Oh, the most outrageous, because I was going to say probably like bookkeeper or accountant, because then you could work for any kind of company. I would definitely start a bar. That's still on the list. Like, I'm now, you know, a practical family man, but I'd love to have a bar. I'd love to be on the beach in Costa Rica. Yes.
So the last book might be you buying the bar in Costa Rica, right? That may be the last book.
I will be the author making a cameo in my own book, buying the bar off the characters so they can finally escape the roller coaster they've been on for the past 20 books. That sounds like a good way to do it.
I love that. That is so good. That is so rich. Really, it is. Tell me something on your bucket list.
I'd like to ride the Trans-Siberian Railroad. I think you already find
trains.
It really boring, and I'd probably spend most of my time drunk, but I think I would really enjoy it. It's one of those things that I've just, it's when you ask it, it's what leapt to mind. There's a lot on that bucket list, but that's totally what leapt to mind.
But I wanted to ride the Orient Express until, you know, now, of course, you can't go to Turkey anymore, Istanbul or wherever it was supposedly ended. But I love trains. I love model trains. I love riding on trains. I love everything about trains. To me, I envision a writer on a train writing the best book in the entire world. So I love trains. I always have wanted to do that. How fun is that? Gosh. Okay, so your wife and I get together and we decide to write a book about your life so far. What are we going to title it?
Oh, that's a. oh, that's a really tough one. Probably
we don't
the
have
man
any filters
the,
in this show.
Probably the man
sorry,
at the computer,
again?
Because no matter what I do, I seem to end up at a computer for just about everything.
At a computer, the man at the computer. Yeah. There you go. That works for me. You know, at least you know. So, as a bonus question, what do you want your epitaph to read?
You know, I really enjoy. I'm trying to remember the movie this is from, but there was one where a utterly non-heroic character died, and his gravestone nonetheless read, "Died saving his children from a sinking battleship." Something like that would be good. Something like that, but original would be nice.
But more original. I love that.
Yeah.
Brian Aldred, I'm so glad that you and I had a chance to talk. Thank you so much for bidding on the auction interview and coming on the show. It has been a lot of fun talking to you. And, you know, who knows? We may bump into each other in Costa Rica behind the bar one day, right?
You never know. I'm around. Let me know if you're ever going down.
You never know. I will. And you let me know when your new book is out so you can come back and tell me all about it, okay?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Thank you. I've had such a fantastic time. Thank you for being with me tonight. And have a terrific weekend. And thank you for all the wonderful things you do with your charity and with your service to your country. Have a wonderful weekend, Ryan.
Oh, thanks so much, Pam. You're very welcome. And have a great weekend.
And that's our show for tonight, everyone. Sunday, I am going to switch places with Libby Fisher-Hellman on her show, Second Sunday Crime. And I'm going to go ahead and interview her, so tables turn. And then on Monday, one of my absolute favorite authors in the entire world, Professor David Morrell, who, as you well know by now, created Rambo. He has his new book and his trilogy has just released. And Ruler of the Night is the book we'll be talking about. Please join me on Monday for that. And if you're around on Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern, I'll be talking to Libby in Chicago. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you, veterans, for your service. God bless you, veterans' families. And thank you. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.